Does anyone have any questions? Can I make a comment before I answer?
Yeah.
Something I meant to say earlier, because I gave a long riff about America, which sounds like I'm against it, which I'm hardly. But I've traveled enough to know that in almost every country, free or otherwise, the people within the country, unless they're directly persecuted or having a religious problem, they always say that it's the freest country in the world. They're in a closed echo chamber, and it's just human nature. You hear what others are saying. So just because everyone around you, you know, home of the free, land of the brave, doesn't mean it still is so. You've got to test it against something. And my father told me a story that I think fits nicely within this. You know, he was head of the temperance department for years, and among other countries, he went to Bulgaria many times with anti-smoking and anti-alcohol programs that the government was supporting. So he would go as a guest of the government. And he actually took us as a family once, which is quite interesting. We were picked up by a limousine driving through the main street, and here's all the posters with all the leaders, typical communist things, and we noticed the guy next to us is on the poster. And so Dad asked him, and he says, "Oh, it's election time." So Dad says, "Oh, wish you the best." He says, "No worries, no one's running against me." So, but anyhow, communism tried to restrict religion big time. Not always by overt persecution, but just marginalizing the old people and boxing them in, waiting for them to die, as long as they couldn't teach their kids. And the issue that we saw was that a lot of young people were going to church instead of school, and in the end, the government would take them away from the family, which they'll do here if social services come to believe that your religion is against the interests of the child. So it split the church. And the church disfellowshipped many of the ones that refused to send their kids to school, disfellowshipped them, and about seven pastors. And then a bit after that, some of the GC leaders came through who didn't know any background, and the government leaders said to them, they said, "You know, what should we do with these people here, these dissidents?" And the leaders said, "Oh, they're not Adventists, they're not us." So as soon as they left, they imprisoned seven pastors and a bunch of members. So when Dad came through, you know, he's dealing with the government. They might have even told him. I forget how he found out about it, but he found that they had these members in prison. And he said, "You know, I've heard that you've imprisoned these people." And they said, "Your own leaders say that they're not Adventists." And Dad said, "Well, they are." And he says, "If you don't release them," he said, "I will go around the world telling everyone this is not a free country." And they immediately released them. They wanted the world to think it's free. And think North Korea at the moment. It's hard to see through it, but if you look closely what's going on, they like to believe that they have a great, you know, perfect paradise for people. I'm sure some of the leaders know it's not, but, you know, they're creating a sort of a mind game where people within that echo chamber, not knowing the rest of the world, they think it's great. So you have to have a point of reference. And for us, it needs to be the Bible, prophecy, and of course, in particular for Adventists for these times, you can read some of the things that Ellen White lays out, what might happen. Then I think you're far more likely not to be deceived, but, you know, the Bible says that the times are coming when even the very elect will be deceived.
Yes, you had mentioned earlier about A.T. Jones, his situation with a blue law that was coming to light. With a lot of these other blue laws, I know that are probably mostly in the South, would there be a time that legislators might turn those on again?
Well, they're there. They only have to apply them. I was in North Dakota last year, and on Sunday I went to Walmart to buy something, and here it was locked, and a sign on the door saying we can't open on Sunday because of blue laws. So they're still there, and they can be applied any time. But, of course, blue laws are not national Sunday laws. They're reminders of when the line between church and state wasn't so clear, and the society was willing to apply regulations to support Sunday observance. And Sunday observance in itself doesn't restrict your practice of faith. And Ellen White says that, you know, we're not to challenge it, which is an interesting comment, because in her day, Adventists did challenge it. And there were only 15 to 20,000 Adventists at a period when they had, I think it was 900 of them, were either severely fined or imprisoned or some put on chain gangs for breaking the blue laws, things like ploughing their own field on the farm on Sunday. But it's probably better if a blue law is applied not to offend against it. But, you know, when it requires you not only to worship on Sunday, but you will get penalized for worshiping on Sabbath, say, or for being a member of an Adventist church, and you know, then it's another thing. And by the way, you're probably well known by the authorities. On two occasions, an Adventist that works in downtown DC in their computer area, for want of a better term, he came to me and he says, "You have no idea what's going on." He says, "Everything is being electronically processed," and he said, when they feed in things like your purchases, your travel, there's a GPS in your car as well as your phone and so on. You know it at all times. He says there's a huge hole around the Sabbath when they track all of the information from someone who's a Seventh Adventist. They don't need to go to the books to find out whether you're an Adventist. You pop out instantly on a computer analysis, which is not a bad thing, but you know them by your actions.
Comment and question. The day after 9/11, I think it was Jerry Falwell that came out and made the statement about why New York was attacked. Remember those yeah. things? And he added one to the, they were all true except for the last one. Remember what the last one was? "And you've created a wall of separation between church and state."
Yeah, well then, I said it before, there's actually a hatred by the religious right against the wall. And I maybe this is a good chance for me to just remind you, our brochure this year features the wall. I've got a bit of blowback. I don't know why. People just wanting to be offended. I guess by definition, they must be liberals. We just thought since everyone's talking about a wall, this is the time to remind them of the very real, it's real, but a figurative wall of separation between church and state that we're wanting to maintain. But on our wall, if you look at the graphics, they're the names of all of the greats of civil society in the U.S. on the wall, like the Vietnam Memorial. And, you know, they did good things. And then up front, statues taken from the Reformation Wall in Geneva. You might not know it exists, but it's at least 100 yards long with all of the great figures of the Reformation. So we have Reformation figures standing in front of our wall. So a combination, if you like, of church and state, but the wall divides between secular and religious developments. You know, we're not commenting on the wall. I mean, the U.S. has every right. You need to keep it straight. Any country has a right to maintain its borders. That shouldn't be a contentious issue. The contention should be, and we've talked about it in Liberty, whatever the law is, of a legitimate civil laws, you don't want any state to exercise them in a way that abuses the human dignity of other human beings. So, fine. And I came from another country. I'm here because I filled out the right forms and my parents and so on. But if the government decides not, that's their right. But for them to take some people that are claiming, refugee status and then mistreat them and rip their kids away and all the rest, I think as Christians, we should object to that. That's just mistreatment. That's not a matter of law. That's a matter of treatment. But I would hate for the Adventist church to get divided over whether or not we should have a wall. It's sort of nothing to do with the church, you know, the wall on the southern border. But I'm afraid the president doesn't read much about what happens in the rest of the world. You know, in North Korea, the North Koreans have built tunnels under the border enough for two tanks to go abreast. Wall wouldn't stop that. In Israel, and I've stood next to the big wall in Israel, it's about 14 foot high, concrete tower, it actually leans towards you. But again, the Palestinians have been tunneling under it. So as the Chinese with the Great Wall and the English with, the Romans with Hadrian's Wall found that, you know, it could slow things down a bit, but there's no wall big enough to stop whole people movements that are encouraged or, you know, have armies or whatever. There's just too many variables. So a wall is only one of them.
What do you think of MIT's idea? They had a program for solving problems, and they came up with the idea to have one day a week to solve the global warming problem, to have one day a week where transportation and business would not operate. Do you think that Green Sabbath has anything to do with Sunday law?
Well, I didn't see that, but we don't quite know where it began. It seems like Croatia was one of the areas, because it's a strong Catholic influence in Croatia, then Germany, and now much of Europe is being peppered with a proposal for the family rest day. And of course the Roman Catholic Church is, you know, boots and all into this thing. But I can't say I know enough to say that they began it. Who knows the dark recesses. But once it began, this Family Rest Day is big time all over the Western world, and it's being pushed a bit in the US. And it's the same sort of idea that it's basically daylight saving for society. If you have one day of rest, it will help the unemployment thing because we'll need more people to work, you know, with the one day off. People will be psychologically recharged. You'll save energy because the system is not up and running on Sunday. It happens to be. It has a good ecological argument. They don't present it as a religious thing. But the mere fact that the Catholic Church and other religious groups are so gung-ho on it makes it very plain. And they've made some public statements, even ironically out of North Dakota, which again, very strong Catholic up there. One of the Catholic officials there unambiguously said that the intent of this was to have people worship on Sunday. So whether the Family Rest Day ends up as the national Sunday law, I can't say, but I'm certain that it's in that continuum.
A little while ago, he referred to, I assume, the president referring to fake news. I think you called it attacking the free press. So I don't see it as attacking the free press. I see him as attacking misinformation that comes from the press.
Well,
so could you elaborate on that? Because you implied the press is honest and tells the truth.
Well, they never have they? But when they're all saying it, you get the truth mixed in there. If you know U.S. history, early on, Franklin's nephew, I think he was, ran a newspaper called The Aurora. You ever heard about that? It was a big newspaper in early Americana or America. And the Aurora bothered the politicians, and it was a big part of President Adams bringing his Alien and Sedition Act. Anyone remember that? It was a capital offense to criticize the president under President Adams' tenure. Capital offense means you'd be killed for it, executed. But they wrapped up the Aurora into that, and I think they closed it down in the end. But early on, the powers that be saw the press as a deep threat, and we survived that one. But this I've never seen anything like what's going on now. And yes, there's misinformation. I mean, any fool knows that Fox TV is a party instrument. I mean, I even know the history of it. Fox is Murdoch's creation. In Australia, when I was down there, he had Fox Radio. Murdoch made his money with cheap National Enquirer-type magazines. I think it was People or something. I mean, it was lurid stuff. He's never been a responsible journalist. He's in it for the money. It's to stir and agitate. And Fox directly came from Australia here to be a partisan instrument. And then you could see MSNBC or whatever, very liberal and all that. I mean, that's sort of a no-brainer. But when you allow all the avenues to say their piece, then you can decide. I also know what's happened in this country. I mean, the news in the US has never been as good as in the rest of the Western world. Part of it, just the mentality of a big country. Henry David Thoreau, you know, the Walden Pond guy. I mean, I like his writing, but he said at one point they were putting a telegraph across the pond to England, and he says, what does the big flapping ear of America need to hear about what's happening in England? They didn't much care. Superficial news has been the norm for a long, long time. Plus, the US is very self-absorbed, so it looks in, it doesn't sort of, and again, to quote another figure from the US, Mark Twain, at the time of the Spanish-American War, he made a statement, because he was a bit of a wag, you know, he said, foreign wars are God's way of teaching geography to Americans. And there's sort of some truth in that. We now know where Iraq was. I don't think people much knew before. And I've seen something develop. Now, of course, we're all victims, or maybe that's the wrong word, we're all along for the ride with unprecedented technological change. And the computer just barely took off in the mid-80s with the Mac Plus, which popularized what till then was, you know, rooms full of stuff to get the equivalent. Remember, we went to the moon, maybe. We went to the moon with less computing power than you can get in a $1 calculator today, right? So, the dissemination of information through non-print media and all the rest has been horrible for the newspapers and even the television. Remember, you can turn on your TV. Unfortunately, when I stay in hotels, click, 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 200, 300 channels, and none of them are any good, right? But it's just diffused everything. And remember, a news media like I'm trying to think of one of the news services run by a church. Lost my point, but there's a number of old news media. Christian Science Monitor. Remember Christian Science Monitor's news service? That was one of the big ones. Gone. And some of the European news services, pretty much gone. Newspapers closing everywhere. Even in Washington, the nation's capital, there's only two newspapers. There's the Washington Post, that people remember from the Watergate times, and there's the Times. And people have totally forgotten the Times is 100% owned by the Moonies. You think you're getting normal news on that? And so they've been firing reporters right, left and centre. The infrastructure can't support them. And I go to some of these events and I can see how the news comes about. You go to an event where they're giving a briefing or whatever, and as you come in the door, there's a sheet with the information on it. And then in the news, a day or two later, I read it. And it's just everything that's on that sheet. They're not checking anything. I shouldn't say it's a generalization, but there isn't the facility, the interest, or even the ability to really check much anymore. So yes, the media are being manipulated by the government like crazy, but at the same time, because of the internet and that, all sorts of conspiracists are rising up, and the president and others are very troubled by contrary news. They don't want any of this around. But the toxic mix, describe it different ways, but the end result is, yes, we're getting very damaged news. But still, if you've got half an interest and got the time, you can find at least informative information on most anything. But this is an interesting area. What I often say in afternoon meetings, you and I can't know the very end of time. Ellen White says, no time prophecy after 1844. I think we're close, but there's a dynamic. I believe that God's holding it back for hopefully waiting for us to do something. But things can speed up or slow down a little bit. But one thing I will stake my life on, in fact, it's already almost happened. The world that you and I know is about to pass away. We're in the middle of a far more radical sociological shift and everything that goes with it than happened over about a century in the Industrial Revolution. It's far more radical. And the US military, to go back to them, they know about it. Things like water supply, unrest in the cities, electricity supply, those are now the catalysts for massive dislocation and wars even. And they watch those sort of things much more than they used to.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I'll get the mics back.
Question for you. It's got a couple of parts to it. So one part is, at least the news that I listen to, they say that there's a couple or several factions that give the President of the United States his support, and one of those main factions is the evangelical. So one question is can you kind of shed some light on the different groups, and if you will, Protestant groups that make up the evangelicals? And then going beyond that, do you see any linkage between the evangelicals, their support to the president, and his appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court? And then just one more linkage.
Sort of answering all your own questions.
One more linkage. Do you see any linkage between the evangelicals and what just happened with, I think it was the U.S. Supreme Court, and I believe President Trump, when they banned transsexuals in the U.S. military? So is there a line that goes from evangelical, President of the United States, and then what we see happening on the political scene?
Well, there's a line. It's not even a secret line. I mean, you can read about it any tick of the clock. This is an unprecedented alliance between politically active religious conservatives and this administration. Now, all modern presidents, at least, are influenced by the different factions that help support them into office. I mean, that's not unusual or even wrong. Although, remember, we're in a different dynamic than when this country began. There weren't political parties other than the Federalists and the... I'm trying to think what the other group were called, but, you know, there were... No, anyhow, there were two views of how the Constitution would be put together, but early on there weren't parties. Like Thomas Jefferson won the presidential election, Adams won the presidential election. Thomas Jefferson was the runner-up. He became the vice president. That's what they did when there weren't two parties. Everything has changed. This has become a partisan setup, and while moneyed interests not only had influence, it was moneyed interest, men with moneyed interest, that started the whole thing. If you think it was just people spontaneously erupting, you don't understand how it began. It was moneyed interest, and it was England, of course, taxing, but prohibiting the moneyed interest here from issuing letters of credit. That precipitated everything. But still, that existed to some degree. But what really changed this country, President Eisenhower warned about it when he left. The industrial military complex that he used. By necessity you'd have an industrial military complex, but we'd become very industrialized, so by definition, it's become overwhelming in its influence. So we do have special interest groups. One of the worst things that happened in recent years was the Supreme Court decision, and President Obama got into trouble for publicly talking about it. I think it is State of the Union. The Supreme Court held that corporations have the rights of individuals. Did you know that? I think they did it. They're not. I've seen no evidence that the Supreme Court are a bunch of cynical partisans, but they get caught on hoisted on their own petard now and then. And they would go back if they went back to the original logic of the Constitution. They have to recognise corporate thinking, but that's very bad when you start treating corporations as though they have the same rights. And remember the outgrowth of that. We have unlimited. Money can be raised by corporations for political campaigns, unlimited. It's subverting the process. Plus, you think there's trouble already, it'll be 10 times worse if what the religious right and the president want gets through, the repudiation of the Johnson Amendment. Not a good law in itself, because we don't want the churches troubled by the state, but Johnson is a payback to one of his political opponents and an election where he felt that groups, including churches, had tried to thwart his election, paid them back by putting an amendment on a religious bill, but it was just an add-on. These guys put add-ons to bills that have nothing to do with what the add-on's about. And he said there that churches are restricted in political activity. And for years now, the religious right have tried to pass first a bill called the Jones Bill. And I even put the article in Liberty once from D. James Kennedy, long dead and gone, but he was a big television evangelist at the time. And I had him write an article in Liberty, his view, that the churches need to be unbound and allowed to have unlimited political activity. In other words, raise unlimited monies for a party or a particular candidate, let the candidate speak from the pulpit, send out flyers recommending that person. At a time when there was campaign finance reform and other groups were restricted, churches have a whole go. So they didn't get that. So now with President Trump, he stated that he wants to repudiate the Johnson Amendment. And interestingly enough, the president is ready to do it by executive order, but he hasn't. I don't really know why. It'd be an easy thing to do. They're quite set for it. They did try to put it as a rider on, what was the bill recently, within the year? I think it was a military appropriations bill, and I thought that it was through. It was even advertised in the media that it was a done deal, and I was listening very late to, I think it was C-SPAN, and I heard that near midnight, the night before the bill was passed, they pulled it. So I can only guess that they're cautious about it because it's going to make a sea change in this country. when politically active religious groups can raise massive amounts of money and push elections whichever direction they want. Not a good thing. But as far as the different groups, it's not worth identifying, and it's not all Christians. They, you know, from the beginning they called themselves the moral majority. It may be a good intention to mobilise a moral sensibility for the country, but the politically active part were never the majority of Christians. And, you know, there are a strange cross-section of different public evangelists, you know, different TV and radio evangelists and mega churches and so on. It's not as purely conservative as when Jerry Falwell was around. It's a bit broadened, but they're united by their willingness to use political means for religious, you know, for religious ends. And it's not just Protestants. They are, there's a lot of Catholic groups united with them. And they're not all bad people. In fact, by and large, not, except for a few crazy public evangelists who, you know, you wonder where they're coming from now and then. But they're good people. They've just bought into a bad model. They think that morality can be accomplished in a country by legal application, by forcing people. And they're part of what's going on now on the gay deal. You know, I think, you know, on the moral spectrum, it's sort of obvious that the US and the rest of the world is declining morally. At the same time, there's been some human rights abuses against, you know, some of the people of that persuasion. And so on a civil level, you know, it's not all wrong that they've at least, once the Supreme Court in the case from Texas, I was trying to think what it's called, but anyhow, there was a case in Texas where these two homosexuals were interrupted like cats. Neighbors complained and they came and then it went to the Supreme Court. And since the authorities broke into their home, the Supreme Court got caught. Do they want to uphold the legal restrictions against this sort of behavior, immoral behavior, or do they want to defend that they had a right in their home, a right of privacy? If you really read back on it, they were largely concerned about privacy. You don't want people smashing your door down, as they actually do sometimes, and abusing you. But once that was done, Lawrence v. Kansas, that was the case. And once that opened the floodgates, you know, gay behavior, gay marriage, and, you know, don't confuse it with Christian marriage, but, you know, marriage relationship, contractual thing, it's all permitted. But the religious right have mixed their moral indignation with this, with their determination to stamp it out by law. And think of the model. Early Christians in Rome, in the Greco-Roman Empire, you know, homosexuality was actually formally adopted. It was not as grotesque as now, but it was sort of the protege model. But it was standard, right? As well as all sorts of pagan sexual rights and so on. There's no evidence that Christians tried to restrict the larger society. They didn't have the power. Nor did they say they wouldn't, you know, run a shop in the pagan thoroughfare. They were speaking truth and morality to the immoral ones. But here in this country, the Christian right presume this is a Christian country. This is where they go wrong. It's a Christian economy designed to protect and enforce Christianity. And so they're determined to move on in, use their power and stop these people. And their narrow view, or at least narrow application of a very biblical view, has set us up for, as it's often playing out, it's either gay rights or religious rights. And if we leave it on that level, we will lose. I can guarantee you, in America today.
My question is, change the subject a little bit, is how do you think artificial intelligence, the technology we have coming forward, how will that affect religious liberty?
Well, it's all affecting it.
How do you think it's going?
You can't separate all the rights, any right from the other. It's been said many times that it's very true. You mess with one civil liberty and you'll affect the others, because they're just different expressions of a respect for the autonomy and the right of the individual and their thinking process. Artificial intelligence is dangerous on many levels. If you listen to Elon Musk and others, you know, they think that we're likely to set up an autonomous system where the machines start making decisions for us and treating us like helpless children. Even some of the experiments I've seen, the machines come up with very strange statements about humans are the problem. But on the simplest level, we've already had a couple of lucky escapes. A lot of the NORAD and the Russian defense systems are fully computerized, and they make threat assessments. And a couple of times in Russia and a couple of times in the U.S., everything on the board looked like it was a full-scale attack. And once in the U.S. and once in Russia, it was only a low-level person that just was absolutely convinced it was a mistake and refused to act on it that stopped war, nuclear war. And again, I believe that we're here by the grace of God. There's no logic to us human beings getting this far without even more mistakes. Can I just say one thing? Because I love history. Like the Cuban Missile Crisis. I'll just tell you two examples. When the U.S. blockaded Cuba, where there already were nuclear weapons, they thought that Khrushchev would tell the Russian Navy, and he didn't tell the submarines. And so a Russian submarine, first thing they knew about it is they came under depth charge attack by the Americans, warning them off. But a depth charge will sink you in a warning. And so immediately the Russian sub-commander gave orders to launch all their missiles, nuclear missiles, at the U.S. That was their standing order, still is. And lucky for all of us, his second-in-command questioned him, and in the end guns were drawn and basically a mutiny. And in the end, the commander agreed to surface first, look around. And he surfaced in the middle of U.S. Boats. And the sailors leaning over laughing at them. And I've even met someone that was on one of those boats. It's a real thing. That's how close on that side. On the other side, or at least of the country, an American U-2 stumbled across the border as usual. Probably the plan, but they went across Russia. And the Russian jets scrambled to shoot it down. And so they gave word to the starfighters based in Alaska to go and protect them and fight against the Russians. And I've read the report of one of the American pilots. Since they were in a full nuclear alert, they took off and all they had were nuclear missiles, air-to-air nuclear missiles. And he said, if we had found the Russians, we would have fired them. So, we're here because of God's mercy, not because of man's constraint. You've got to understand that.
Yes, should we as Adventists, especially the leaders, should they be going to the Vatican and being on their committees like the Operation, Global Operations, and voting on certain civil situations? Unfriendly relations with the Vatican.
Well, you and I were talking about this. Now, our church for years has done this. How can it be wrong to talk to government leaders or other church leaders just to have lines of discussion? You would hope that our people use the opportunity to explain who we are and to push for things that are important for us. Like, for example, I can tell you one, talking to Dr. John Gratz, who's now retired, he and I discussed it, and he actually met, I think, with the Catholics a couple of times to see if we could come under their diplomatic umbrella in China, because they've pushed really hard against the Chinese government over church prerogatives. You know, the Chinese government has been appointing bishops, Catholic bishops, and doing far worse. And to their credit, the Catholic Church really pushed hard against the Chinese. We're not big enough to make much of a difference diplomatically with China. So it's not wrong when you talk about religious liberty that we could tell the Catholics in that case, put in a word for Adventists that we are being persecuted to. Compromise is the issue, not who we contact. We should be allowed to talk to people. But, you know, like you, I see some pictures and, you know, on the simplest level, you know, if you meet the Pope, how do you call it? What do you call him? I would say, sir. But if you meet him and you say, you know, your holiness, then there's a compromise. Or if you're kissing his ring, there's a compromise. And, you know, I see some pictures that bother me a bit. You know, it's fine to shake a hand, but then you sort of have one of these arm wrestling at you. I don't know. But, you know, our church really has always had contacts, and I would hope that we always can. They're not wrong, but better when they come to see us. And I can tell you, we've had interesting meetings at the GC. We had a meeting, it was after 9/11, with, I remember, five muftis from the ex-Soviet republics, Muslim muftis. I remember before 9/11, we had the Taliban. About five or six government ministers from the Taliban came and talked with us. Wouldn't now, would be very wrong. But, you know, there's all sorts of interesting discussions that are held. I wouldn't reflexly criticize it, but watch out, because individual representatives could compromise, but I can't see any mechanism even now where, if they were a full compromiser, how they could compromise our whole church stance and initiative. That's not easily done. There's too many people would complain.
Right here.
Thank you for your this morning's and this afternoon's round the world presentation. I want to bring the story home.
Good.
Is that all right?
Depends reading, which home.
I'm reading from the Inspired Word.
It's not TV, is it?
Evangelism. Page 696. It was not the will of God that the coming of Christ should be thus delayed. We got to get that straight.
Right. That's actually what I made a comment, was it this afternoon or this morning, how when I came down from the platform in Australia once, a guy just leapt on me, and I made that statement. I said that Christ could have come before this.
Well,
and
it
says,
wasn't,
you know,
his will.
What?
It wasn't his will.
Of course not. In fact,
now listen
Jesus
to this.
Himself thought that he was coming within a lifetime.
I'm bringing it to home right here. We may have to remain here in this world because of insubordination many more years, as did the children of Israel. Shouldn't we be talking about ourselves?
She wrote that a few more than 40 years ago, didn't she? No, it's true. We're in a delayed period. That's what I'm saying. It's you know, there's a dynamic, and you can see we come to the edge and we go around again. But how many times is God going to let it go round and round before it comes to a crisis, final crisis?
We have another question here, right here.
Yes, hi. Since we talked about the news not being very accurate, I think I read a quote from the Pope that the fundamentalists were more dangerous than terrorists. So I don't know if you...
Well, I gave that similar quote from Benedict's speech. That's what he said. The threat of violence from the Sola Scriptura reformers was dangerous. And also, the Pope recently, it was reported in Europe, but it didn't seem to get any play here. It was less than 2 years ago. Something was going on in the U.S. at the time, and he made a comment to a magazine in Italy that the sooner the U.S. comes under global governance, the better. That, I don't think it means that we will ever come under global governance, but that's their intent, to sort of pull us down to size.
Another question back here?
Yeah.
Another question.
This is from my stepdad. He was wanting to know if you could comment on what we'd heard in the news about the law permitting religion to be taught in public schools by Trump.
Well, you know, I've tried not to put too much of this in liberty lately, because they're all little, tiny little fires all over. What's going on, you know, it was said before about the threat to religious liberty in the US. At the moment, it's not what you might think of as a threat. Remember, the Constitution deals with, it's been defined, not in the amendment, but establishment and free exercise. The government's not to establish religion nor prevent the free exercise. For a long time in the US, the main threat, and it still is an establishment one. In other words, the seeking of favour, government favour, by acceptable mainline religious groups. And your church has played along with this, inadvertently. The education department loved to take lots of government money. That's threatening the establishment clause, right? And what's going on at the moment with this coalition that's supporting the administration is, they talk wonderfully for religious liberty, but you've got to sort of decipher what's going on. What they're pushing for is religious entitlement. They want far more liberty for their view of religion. So just think about it in its extreme form. Do you think they're pushing for greater rights for Muslims, say? Absolutely not. But they want creationism to be taught in public schools. And you and I presume, we're all pro-creationists, right? That's a wonderful Bible story. But do you want the civil authorities to be teaching that in the schools? I wouldn't like it any more than if the public schools were teaching, a Hindu origin of the world. It's not appropriate. It could be wrong, most likely to be wrong, because by definition it's a subset of religion. And even if it's the right message, it's the wrong messenger. We don't want the state with their force and general taxation and, all that goes with it. They shouldn't be doing it. But that's what you're seeing. So a lot of what's going on, if you come at it from the point of view of your faith and your biblical views, you probably won't be overly offended by what's happening. But it's an entitlement version of religious liberty. And I believe once they've got the establishment game locked up, then the free exercise restrictions will follow very quickly. We're not in that phase. But do you think for a minute, for example, that if the religious right had the whip hand, that they would be hands off legally on the whole gay movement? They would drive it to extermination, which morally fine, but that's not the way to deal with it. And I drew the parallel before. Remember what happened in Germany. People, and it was the Christians supported it. Adventists supported Hitler. They loved the moral regeneration of the Nazi Party. So don't fall for the religious right at the moment. And the cat's out of the bag anyhow. If you read it enough about it, you'll find that recently, in very recent years, on a couple of occasions, some of the leading characters in the religious right and down on gay rights and so on, they went to Africa at the request of a number of governments and tutored some of the legislators. And almost before they left, there were things like death penalty for gay behavior. Maybe at the end of the day, that's what God gives, for the immoral and the dissolute. But it's not now, and it's not given for us to exercise that thing. But that's what they've done in Africa. So you know very well, if they have the power, that's what they'll do here. And I've said for years that if you investigate, you'll find that way too many in the politically active religious right are in cahoots or in consultation, maybe is a better word, with groups like the Christian Reconstructionists. I watch, and since I'm watching a lot of in Washington, I see the names of people that clustered around both Obama, Clinton, and not both, but Obama, Clinton, and Bush, and now President Bush. And Gary North, for example, the son of the founder, Rush Dooney was the founder of Christian Reconstructionists. They want to establish an Old Testament economy in the U.S. And they're on record as saying when they get into power, after a six-month cooling-off period, it's mandatory death for adultery, homosexuality, and Sabbath-breaking. Now, whether they get it or not, I don't know. But for them to be in the inner circle at the White House, I know they're whispering in the ear of people. And already part of their thinking has taken root because they have influenced and developed the movement called Dominionists. Dominionism is a light version of Christian Reconstructionists. And Dominionism is mainstream in the right-wing religionists.
All right, last question right over here, Elder Steve.
My question is, how is climate change directly related to persecution of Sabbath keepers? How will that tie in together?
Well, we don't know what will happen, but it's easy to see what is happening. like I say, in the Pope's document, he's linked the climate degradation, and maybe that's a better way to put it. To me, you can argue till the cows come home whether climate change is caused by man's input, you know, pollution and so on. But you've got to have your head in the sand to not recognize that all around the world the weather is out of whack. It has been for years. It's getting worse and worse, more extreme. So that's happening. And in dealing with that, extreme things need to be done. And the Pope of Rome in particular, but there's other voices, is linked it directly to as Jerry Falwell did with 9/11. He's linked it directly to God's favor, that we have to acknowledge his principles, and that the Sabbath rest is part of honoring the creation that he gave us, is turning back environmental degradation. Whether that's the main reason that there'll be religious persecution, I couldn't say. I think so, but it's sort of dynamic. It could be all of the above. Years and years ago, I wrote what I felt was a clever editorial at Liberty. I called it the convergence, because if you're looking at the environment, you can pretty much make an argument that this is what's mobilizing people to some sort of religious action, and there's a danger point. What the latest figure I heard is 2025, I think, when it's sort of all going to go crazy. You can look at the economy. You know, it's mainstream. If you don't listen, the economists that are analyzing it are positing that either in no later than 2020, it's all going to go bang. We're living in just a fool's paradise on money. It's stock market tells you that. It's sort of what the mood is at the day. It's not any inherent value. You know, and then you can look at political breakdown and so on. So all of these lines of causality are coming together. And even if some of them don't come out the way you think, it's just incomprehensible that there won't be a flashpoint at some near date. And, you know, if you don't believe Bible prophecy, sure, the world can go on. But that's what I'm saying. The world, you know it, is not going to be the same. It's changing. It's going. And I read a lot of social scientists and so on, and they keep saying we're at a hinge point of history. It's exciting. You know, we know about it from the Bible. We're about at the end, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. And I hope you find it stimulating or of interest, but don't just rely on me. Check everything out. And I might be wrong on something. None of us are perfect, but, you know, through Liberty and contacts we have, I can see it very clearly. And I think Adventists should be more informed. I haven't even gotten onto the Islamic issue. Read your Bible first. You never read everything that Ellen White wrote, very unlikely, but we should be informed on those things. But given that Islam now is stirring this country, why don't you read the Quran? I've been to any number of Adventist meetings where there's very well-meaning Adventists with a booth, messages to the Muslims. And, you know, they wish fervently to reach out to these people and make headway, and that's God, good, and God will bless it. But I don't know how he would bless ignorance when people haven't read the holy book of another group, and then they take their statements for what it says. There is so much misinformation about the Quran, it's mind-boggling. Read a little bit of it. In this part of the world, I'm trying to think, yeah, you're not that far from Mormons. Read a little bit of what they're pushing. It might be shocking to you. You know, how can we interact with others if we have not even a passing familiarity with something that they hold very important? And I think we need to be informed. It's a double-edged sword. Ellen White has interesting statements about how we shouldn't read the newspaper. I think because it's morally debilitating to see all this stuff. And yet we're caught in a push-me-pull-you of knowledge. We want to be willfully ignorant in a day of massive over-information, most of it wrong. I think we have to have inquiring minds, but if our basis is on the Bible, if our faith and commitment to God is secure, why can't we have a little knowledge to know the others, to speak to them? I mean, it has to be so. There's plenty of evidence in the Bible that Jesus was very well informed about his world, and of course the Bible writings, he knew them back to front. No, you know, we shouldn't be ashamed of knowledge, but ignorance is a great threat to everybody. Great threat. She said that?
Yes, she did.
I hadn't read that paper. That's good.
It was one I've read several times.
they shouldn't spend all their time just in the housework, and that husbands should provide items that made the housework easier so they'd have time to do this.
Yeah, well, Ellen White was very forward-looking at women's issues and many things, really. And I have taken that quote, that's what I said, on the newspapers. She was talking about the moral hazard that you get from exposing yourself to it. But there's no question that, you know, we need to mind our own sensibilities, but we should be informed. We should be informed about our own material. I made a joke about not a joke, I hope it wasn't a real joke, about the fundamentals. But they're very important. I just wish we hadn't numbered so many. But go and check on it. I have gone back and checked, and at most major points we had the number of fundamental, the number that we gave to our fundamentals was pretty much the same as the US amendments. And we have 28. If you think of the timing, I remember exactly when suddenly there was one added, which was only from dividing two, one into two. The Bush administration were counting their chickens before the eggs hatched on the marriage amendment. They wanted to get the 28th amendment to the Constitution, and it failed, but we'd already changed. Doesn't mean anything except that it's curious. And I don't know who it could be, but somebody, maybe different people through different ages, thinks they're clever, I think. But our point of reference should be the Bible, not the Constitution.
We'll let you drink that bottle of water now.
Sorry. I am getting thirsty.
You must be. Well, again, Elder Steve, thank you so much. We appreciate that. And we'll look
remember
forward.
The Liberty Campaign. Don't forget us.
Don't forget the Liberty Campaign. Thank you for coming. Thank you for your questions. Let's bow our heads and we'll conclude with a word of prayer. Father in heaven, thank you for this time together this afternoon to listen to Elder Steed. It's been stimulating, Lord. It's been interesting. It's been challenging. And above all else, we leave here thankful for that we still have liberties. And may we take every advantage that we have of today and tomorrow, because we know that suddenly, sooner than what we expect, everything we've read about will just all click into place. So we pray that we can be people of the book and be people who are awake and alert at our posts of duty, and in between time help us to get the message out that others too may know what's coming in this world. Be with us now, dismiss us with your blessing, grant us traveling mercies, and we praise you for your goodness, and we thank you for your love. In the name of Jesus, amen.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry, as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.